Okay, we have a couple of questions from the first module of the presentation. And what was your question?
I wanted to know about that chicken-looking warrior with snakes coming out his feet.
Yeah.
Who he is and why the snakes and, what's why that symbolism is.
It's a Gnostic gemstone. And but it's older than Gnosticism. It goes back to astral religion, mysticism of different sorts. And it has the three Greek letters, IA and the long O, which is the omega, Iao. Iao is are the vowels from the name of Yahweh. You see, the Tetragrammaton, which is the name of God that was unpronounceable, and is represented in the Old Testament with four letters, YHWH, you can't pronounce them without the vowels. Mm-hmm. So the early Protestants put in the vowels, and they went Yahowah, so Jehovah is what they call God, and you're not supposed to pronounce God's name. In Jesus' time in Galilee, they probably did pronounce the name of God, and they probably knew how to do it, and certainly his brother did, because according to history, his brother actually did the role of the high priest.
Jesus'
brother, James, the righteous, considered to be a great saint because the high priest of the temple, who was appointed by the wealthy people that controlled the temple, who were hated by everybody because they took all these bribes and everything, the people themselves were so outraged at them, they wouldn't let them go in and perform the rite of the high priest on the Day of Atonement, which is once a year to go into the Holy of Holies and pronounce the name of God. And then that was to atone for the sins of Israel. And to pronounce it, you had to know how to pronounce it. And to pronounce it probably was not a name like this. It was probably in tone. Iao. And Iao is what was learned in magical tradition, in all the Greek magical papyri. The name of the Jewish god is Iao. And so it's probably, the scholars say it's Yahweh. Well, don't know. But Iao is the way you see it on all the magical papyri, and the name that you intone when you're calling upon the highest God. So this is a representation, and in the Gnostic seminar we go over the symbolism of this particular thing more, but in Gnosticism there are two gods. There's the original God, the high God, and then there's another deity that he creates that's below him who doesn't think there's a higher God. And this lower god is the one who is the demiurge who creates the heavens and the earth. And so this Iao represents that higher god, and the chicken rooster things and the serpent things are representations that you'll find in Mithraism and everything else that are astrological representations of the ecliptic. And the rooster was connected with, was associated in astrology with sunrise, the cock crowing at sunrise. Mm-hmm. And so those two symbols were associated with this Gnostic gemstone of Iao. It was a way of representing the highest god. And I'm giving you the short answer here, but this is basically what it's supposed to represent. So that was a Gnostic gemstone I showed you. Iao is the word that's on it. And that was part of their understanding about what the highest God was, the unknown God in the Bible. Paul debates with people who want to talk about the unknown God or the etc. He says, no, God is known, and I will tell you all about him and all this sort of thing. So that's what that was about.
So why is he dressed as a warrior? He's got armor, it looks like breastplate. And
yeah, probably because that comes out of a Mithraic tradition. A Mithraic gnosis of some sort, because most of those people were soldiers. I don't know the reasons for all of it. Nobody does. We just know. We just see them lying around, and we see them where they are. But it was a very common one. And uh-huh. Now the other name was Abraxas. Abraxas is a name that adds up to 360, which is the course of the sun, supposedly 360 days of the year. If you add all the letters, they come 360. I actually go over this in the Gnostic seminar, over the symbolism, and talk more in detail about that.
Well, in this piece of work, I don't know if you want this on there, but this thing I'm doing, tracing my pilgrimage in Europe, I'm looking at the periods of time. So they had just come out of the Aryan period, which of course is ruled by the sun, and so there was all this solar spirituality, the serpent being one of the real big symbols of the snake, although that had also been in the goddess tradition in the Taurian age. But so it was really curious to me to see that. And then you're saying it's really about sunrise, so that would be 2000 BC up to...
Well, the cock, the crow, is associated with the sun because of sunrise.
Right.
But the thing is, these symbols, and especially as we study alchemy, symbolism gets very, very hard for us to even understand what it's all about. Medieval people who did the medieval allegories of alchemy used the symbols from the medieval period. They didn't have a grasp of the really ancient ones. You won't find those things coming down in the tradition, but they came down in the tradition to the Hellenistic period from much earlier traditions. And so probably if you look at, for example, Mithraic Kronos, which is Saturn, is represented very often as a man with a snake coiled around him. The snake is going, depending on which way you're looking at him, either counterclockwise or clockwise. And that represents, you know, Kronos with a CH is time, Kronos with a K is Saturn, and very often the two were confused. And so the Mithraic god Kronos, Kronos is the deity who eats his children, and finally his wife Rhea rescues one of the children, who is...
That's Jupiter,
right? Yes,
yeah.
And Zeus, yeah, all that sort of thing. But anyway, in Mithraic symbolism, Kronos is a very important character, and the serpent is used in that. And so, as I say, I think this is related to Mithraic symbolism and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, the reason I was asking you about the time, the period of time, was because I keep trying to see if there is that correlation between those eras when the astrological signs would have been most prevalent in the spiritual.
Well, they were in the Aryan period. In fact, as far as tropical astrology is concerned, we still are, because that's the way all the Western charts are done. But that's when most of the symbolism would have been from that Aryan period, the period of the Age of Aries.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the cock is also sacrificed for certain kinds of things to the highest gods. And so that's another representation of the cock.
Yeah, it was really interesting to me in Glastonbury that, you know, they've got the Tor, which has this, they're saying it's a labyrinth, and it does look like that seven-tiered labyrinth, a really ancient one. But it's these burrows, you know, that look very snake-like, and they wind up to the top of the Tor.
And you have to walk up them, right?
Yeah, well, you can. They actually have made a path because they're trying to keep... you know, the thing, yeah, from being destroyed. But, so, there are these big megalithic stones that have been, they assume, cast off of the top, that it probably was a site during the goddess period.
Mm-hmm.
But now, there's the remains of this church, which is dedicated to St. Michael, who's crushing the snake.
Right.
You know, and so... it's so interesting to look at the period so one symbol gets subsumed by the next, you know. And
well, the word for snake is drakon in Greek, in which we get the word dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's Saint Michael and the dragon.
Dragon, that's right.
But also another thing,
Virgin Mary also is crushing the snake.
Mm-hmm.
many
well
symbols.
Eve steps it crushes the snake with her heel too,
mm-hmm.
foot, her heel. But the serpent in Jewish tradition is very often Leviathan, who also represents Tele, which is the astrological path of the track of the sun around the ecliptic, and also becomes associated with the head and the Tale of the Dragon, which is lunar nodes, and mm-hmm. and gets kind of confused back and forth. If you look in Kabbalistic stuff, it shows it kind of two ways. But anyway, the idea is that that the story of God leading Leviathan around with a hook in his nose, is that's the way a conqueror leads a king who's been conquered, probably goes back to the earliest stories of Babylonian creation stories, in which the original chaos, which is called Tohu Wavohu in Hebrew, but it's Tiamat, the dragon, in Babylonian, where it comes from in the Babylonian myth, Zoroastrian myth. Tiamat is a dragon who is slain, and then when the dragon is slain, that forms the firmament of heavens and earth. Later in Mithraism, it's the bull that's slain. And that's interesting because it goes back to Taurian sorts of things.
It does.
But anyway.
You know, I also wonder if the whole thing of the sacredness of the cow in Hinduism
no doubt.
From
Taurian.
And if you go in the Initiatic Mysteries, if you look at the history of initiation in the oldest place we have, which is in the Greek islands and in the ancient civilization of that was supposedly ruled the Minoan civilization, a Cretan civilization, where the mystery traditions as we know them that started out as being actually public initiation puberty rite traditions, there you find all the altars have horns. Just
mm-hmm.
like the Jewish altar has a horn. Mm-hmm. I talk about the horns of the altar.
Right.
Moses is said to have horns in the Old Testament. In fact, you see drawings of him even in the Middle period with Moses having horns. And but you find these giant horns as these altars in Crete and Minoan, and that goes back again to Taurian times.
Yeah.
So, but I would say, we would have to say that the serpent relates probably mostly to Aryan times,
yeah.
I would think.
Now, there's a real interesting connection that I found, which is Caradwyn is a Celtic goddess,
mm-hmm, right.
Related to Ceres, the Greek
right.
goddess, and her cart is pulled by serpents.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that is really interesting to me, and, you know, the serpent also is this symbol of regeneration, which
mm-hmm.
the goddess was, so I think there was an earlier association that, you know, got carried into the fire.
Could very well be.
I mean, I just think that's really interesting. Yeah, so all these serpents pulling her.
Also, the Druidic or the Celtic Grail tradition is the cauldron, which is the cauldron of Ceridon and so on.
Yeah.
Also, the Greeks, in their civilization, they didn't keep pet cats like the Egyptians did. They kept pet snakes. And every
yep.
home had a serpent that lived near the hearth where it was warm,
yeah.
and would come out and eat the mice and do things like that. And it was considered to be, the hearth was considered to be like the individual altar in a home.
Yeah.
So it was a representation of Zeus sometimes and different
yeah.
things.
Right.
So it's perpetuated a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know where all it comes from. So I don't know where the serpents come from on the chicken with the.
It was so intriguing to me, partly because I've been really looking at Avebury, which is the site that's near Stonehenge,
mm-hmm.
and it had this main circle with two circles in it of stones, and then it had these pathways that came out, two of them that were like a half a mile long, with I think 100 stones at least in each pathway that were like these avenues, and it looked a lot like the snakes from
oh, really?
I was looking at that going, oh my goodness. The
yeah,
legs.
But actually the snakes from that look almost like they could be horns, don't they?
They do. I mean, they're very peculiar looking. Anyway, I just thought, wow, I'm wondering, you know, if that's a typical symbol of
Gnosticism?
Yeah, well...
It's a very common symbol. You find it inscribed on Gnostic amulets to protect you. They're talismans to protect you.
Uh-huh.
And so they're drawing that power of Yao or of Abraxas
mm-hmm.
down
uh-huh.
to protect you.
Yeah.
Because you see, the idea in among the Greeks was the rulership of the planets. which is called Haimarmeni, which is fate or destiny, but it means much more than that, is actually, it's what determines things like whether you'll be fat or thin or what your personality is. If you lose it after you die and then you get a new one, but that, so that's not the real you, that's your ethos, and or what we'd say personality or something. And the real you and the really enduring part of you is beyond that. And so when people are living under the domination of these forces in flesh in this planet, then they're appealing with a gemstone like that to the forces that are the overlords and forces that created these forces that rule us. Unfortunately, they're the forces that rule us. We're imprisoned in this sort of thing. So that's a Gnostic idea. We're imprisoned in this situation, and so we're appealing to a higher source, the source that made the demiurge that made all them, or something like that, you know. That's the whole Gnostic myth of Sophia, that she, there's different ones about the fall of Sophia and different things. I think the most original one is probably of the Gnostic Redeemer, as Sophia as Redeemer, but not as fallen. Mm-hmm. Sophia, if you take my seminar in Gnosticism, you'll learn about this, but we find a fallen Sophia, the fallen feminine, who cares about humanity and tries to help humanity, and she falls into nature and all those sort of things. But there's an actually earlier form of the Gnostic myth about Sophia, and it's not Sophia that falls into matter because she sins, like Eve, you know.
Right.
But rather, it's a story of a Sophia that feels compassion for humanity and situation and comes down to help humanity.
Oh my gosh, so it's a bodhisattva.
Yeah, it's a feminine bodhisattva.
Oh, how interesting.
And that's earlier than most of these Valentinian gnosis and everything. And the place that you find that is the Barbalo Gnostics were the ones that came after this, and Barbalo was somewhat related to this, but this, I'll tell you, I'll get a hold of you the name of the book that these myths are written in about the original Sophia. And there's been some interesting research by feminist authors about this lately that have published. In fact, Christine Payne Towers wanted to call my attention to this latest one that I mentioned on my Gnostic seminar. But that is probably the original myth of Sophia. And then the fall of Sophia is a later thing that goes with this negative Gnosticism.
Which probably happens with the rise of patriarchy.
Of
right?
course.
Because the feminine has to fall.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, it's patriarchy in the church. You know, but I mean, there's already been, patriarchy's already been running the world for a long time. Mm-hmm. And ever since the Mycenaeans came in and wiped out the Cretan Minoan civilization, you've had patriarchy ruling, you know. But,
but it was
okay, I'm going to turn this off now. Okay, how do I do that? Okay, stop.